Hi, this is Keith Kefchin, and you're listening to Dollars and Drivers, a podcast that allows leaders an outlet to discuss what drives them and their distinct way of succeeding in life and business.
Today, I speak with Ed Mady, one of my oldest and dearest friends. I've known him for almost 30 years now, and he recently wrote a book called Honing the Human Edge, and it speaks to hospitality leadership and how that's different in many cases from what he deems as traditional leadership. I hope you enjoy. I know I did. Appreciate you taking a few minutes. You're now a busy author. And for the people who are listening, go out and buy Honing the Human Edge by Edward Mady. And maybe we can start there before we get into some of my typical leadership questions. You wrote this book, but why? What was the motivation behind writing this, and define what the human edge is?
Yeah, thank you, Keith. Really appreciate you having me on your program. Well, you know, through my career, several people will always ask, say, how do you do it? And I would say, well, how do I do what? So how do you run these luxury hotels year after year, and you constantly find yourself in the upper tier where the air is very thin? He says, well, there's a formula. But where did you learn the formula? And what is the formula? And so, of course, you share only the people that you work with, and then, you know, they get on the team, and they start to get really curious of what is the formula. So honing the human edge, and why I called it honing, it's no different than, say, the powders that you would use to, you know, sharpen a knife, or powders you would use to polish a marble floor. So the powders that I built on the operating model of honing the human edge is cultural, customers, strategy, leadership, and team. So those are the five pillars which you would find in any business. Okay. So how do you get those to sing together? And then if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. So you've got to get everybody to get to that next level of luxury. And, you know, everybody has their own definition of luxury and working in that luxury space for so long. Scarcity. So when you get into the scarcity piece, and then you can charge some big bucks. And everybody wants to work on a team that has got a formula. And that formula I learned with Ritz-Carlton, actually. When we went for Malcolm Baldrige Award a few times, with Horst Schulze, who's my mentor, who made me a GM. And for the people that don't understand Malcolm Baldrige, it was a National Quality Award, and it was built so the United States could compete internationally for market share, because we were losing a lot of business to Japan and so forth.
In particular, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and so anyhow, I learned the business science of how to, and how to create, and how to build, and how to find, and how to go to the next level. And so I'm giving back. I want to give back to as many people as I can, and what it is that I've learned throughout my career. And when I started writing the book, I wrote it during COVID and pre-COVID. But in summary, Honing the Human Edge is my program on how people can take skills that they already have, put them all together, and lead a business to the next level of performance.
Got it. I think it's so interesting, because one of my kind of standard questions is about a playbook. I'm a sports person. I know, having read the book now, that you're a bit of a sports nut with baseball. And a lot of leaders can't really articulate what their playbook is. And it seems like that's what you've done here, but how formulaic do you think leadership is? Are there some guideposts, and then you got to roll with the punches? So I guess the question, do you stick to the playbook all the time, or are there some art parts to this?
Definitely art. Definitely art. You and I, obviously, we grew up in an era, and I reread Loneliness of Leadership, the book that you had written a couple years back. Your foundation and the spine of your book has a lot of what it is I have in mind. The thing that's very valuable when you start looking at putting together a playbook. That, let me start with telling a story. And the beginning of this story for myself was I read up on Aaron Sorkin. He's a huge storyteller. And if you want to tell your story of what it is that you're trying to do, what I did not put in the book were the ABCs of the secret recipe. But what I did put in the book is a foundation and a profile of how to get there. Aaron Sorkin, and if I'm reading here, he says that you have to create a story about concepts of intention and desire and obstacle. So you got to talk about the intention, the desire, and the obstacles that you face getting there. Because there is a difference between training, education, and learning. Those are the three key areas that you're going to build around a team. So yes, I have a playbook. Actually, I have a copy of the actual playbook I have right here. It's only 8 pages.
Okay.
Very scientifically driven, which in fact I learned through the Baldrige process because of the science that they used, meaning Baldrige, to have us compete domestically of who were the best companies when it came to quality. And so that's how I built it. I really laid it out in such a manner, Keith, that when you're on the team, you either, you know, there's one rule, follow the rules. So what are the rules? You have to show them the rules.
Yeah. You've clearly done that well. And one of the other things I thought so interesting in the book, because now you got this playbook, yes, you're somewhat of an artist as well. And then bam, some kind of total conflict, the neutron bomb hits your business. What do you do? You get punched in the nose by the bully, the competitor. How did you deal with conflict? Again, you wrote a lot about what happens in those situations. So how have you dealt with those kinds of black swan events?
That's a great question. Well, I always ask, what's the number one mistake that people make in a crisis? Question, answer. They don't know that they're in one.
Yeah.
And then from there, you say, okay, let's define the crisis. So you got to put a definition to it. And after you define, you want to figure out how to survive. Then you put the formula together. But if you don't define it, you can't survive. But the key is to get to thrive because you want to leave it behind. And if you do, in fact, you leave it behind, and then you find yourself going through phases of change when you're dealing with crises. And so I learned many moons ago, even when I first became a GM, that change comes in 4 different chambers very quickly. It's orientation, disorientation, resolution, and continuity. And real quickly to define that, orientation is getting a sense of direction. And you got to get the whole team on board to do that. A disorientation is when you're going through confusion, frustration, and fear, which happens often whenever you're getting smacked in the face.
Yep.
And clarity, learning, and adaption. And then continuity is about stability and performance. And all of us went through our own crises when it came to COVID, because everybody had to try to figure out how the heck they were going to operate.
Yeah, the ultimate crises.
Now, that was a real punch in the face to everyone. And, you know, unfortunately, when I was personally dealing with COVID, I'm born Canadian, and my mom had passed on in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, where they lived, and I couldn't cross the Canadian border to go to her funeral. And that is an ultimate personal crisis of grief, where you have to sit in the office in the morning, put on your laptop, and you start, you know, looking at the funeral and so forth. You know, so that's an ultimate scenario when you start looking at a personal crisis. You can have professional crises all the time, but we all have our own personal crises. And so I found that very, very difficult at that time. And so if I look at stories that the Aaron Sorkins of the world suggest that you talk to when you are wanting to lead any business, it's always good to tie down a story with the distractions, the intentions, and then how you're going to fix it. And so that's how I wrote the book. And I went through the whole process of really trying to piece together, what is it that I can give back? I've been a proud advisory board member for UNLV, been on that program for a while. I introduced my book to the school. I'm hoping it gets on a curriculum. And I was there 3 weeks ago, and I presented to faculty and to students and to the rest of the advisory board. And the question you just asked is the same question that a lot of people are curious about. How do you get through certain points of when you get punched in the face?
Yeah. You also talk, and I think it's probably one of the most overused words in business, maybe misused, is the word strategy. For Ed Mady, what is strategy? How does it go from your brain or the brains of a group into action?
Well, the first thing we all want to agree on is planning is a checklist of going through a process. Strategy is how you win. And okay. You've got to differentiate the two. And the moment that you can differentiate the two, and then you put enough breadcrumbs together to be able to move forward, too many people go backwards into hindsight when you want to understand insight and foresight. And Marcus Aurelius, you know, you quoted him in your great handbook. And as I say, he focuses on the non-obvious versus the obvious. And when you can focus on the non-obvious, and then you can get people to think there. If people don't think there, you will not go there.
So how did you get, again, a disparate group of people to be talking about strategy? Or did that all come from you as the leader?
I think from myself. First, you want to define a team. A team is a group of people that make each other look good. How do you get that team together? You got to select the right people. But more importantly, you got to get them into the paradoxical mindset that they can win, but you've got to be able to not be competitor obsessed. You want to be customer obsessed. How do you build within that creates a certain desire? Desire is a very interesting word because if you don't have desire, you can't build momentum. And if you don't have momentum, you can't build movement. But you have to have a strategy of how to win in order to get there. So you got to get everybody rallied up. And then you say, well, how do we get a team all rallied up? Well, you got to go back to the beginning. How did you select that team in the first place? How did you get in the room? Yeah. And so I have a selection tool, which I'm sure you've used many times over the years.
And you've got there's a number of good ones. I know you're a fan of Talent Plus. I've used that. I've used 2020 Skills and a few others that are hospitality specific, because I do find that some that are maybe applicable in manufacturing environments tend not to be as useful in a very human-based environment like hospitality. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's another segue is hospitality, in your mind, all that different? Maybe I'm wrong about the differences between a people business and what appears to be a non-people business like manufacturing. Do you agree, disagree?
Well, let's take the word hospitality, Keith. There is no larger industry on the planet than hospitality. Maybe Hollywood, I don't know. But there's one thing that does not show up on the scoreboard on any business, and that is the human spirit. How do you build a human spirit, especially in hospitality, in order to have the team understand that you're creating an experience for the consumer that is done through humans, humans dealing with humans? And you go through manufacturing, it's just a bunch of widgets and so forth, but hospitality is a very unique world. And you know that just from your own experience for your being in business and so forth. So the main thing here for me is to say that nothing can ever show up at anybody's scoreboard when it comes to human spirit. That is built rolling up your sleeves, person by person, transaction by transaction, built on trust and some of the other foundational aspects. Hospitality is the love of strangers. You can come up with a ton of different definitions of hospitality, but you know, when you're working in the hospitality business, hotel business, restaurant business, you have to have those basics. And there are a lot of basics associated with how to create hospitality. I would say one of the things I have in my book, and I learned this during Baldrige, because we had to illustrate to the examiners, how do you get all of your people on the same page at the same time in hospitality? So it's 14 words. Remember me, recognize me, anticipate my needs, give me what I want on time. Short story, Valentine's Day. Everyone knows it's on February 14th. Say you decide to celebrate on 15th or the 16th of February to your significant other. You didn't remember, you didn't recognize, you didn't anticipate, and you didn't do it on time. So you're going to sleep on the sofa. One way it is not only good for the employee and good for the customer, they breathe with each other. because you want to remember an employee's birthday. You want to remember, you know, a customer's anniversary and so on. You always want to remember and anticipate. Another story, you know, we had a guest who was paying like $3,000 a night. He was a transient guest, stayed with us a couple of times, then decided to stay a week, bring his family. Then he tells us that he's going to bring his family and his son, and his son is bringing Peter Rabbit. And so we take the clue and the cue, and you start to understand, okay, fine, what are we going to do special for this guy? He was a big, big CEO. Regardless, we said, okay, we're going to do something. We dressed up one of the bellmen because we had an Easter Bunny rabbit outfit. We sent the bellman to the airport to pick up the guests because the little boy gets off the plane and he has Peter Rabbit. And all of a sudden, he sees a big Peter Rabbit. So that's a moment of hospitality. And then you say, okay, what is that? That is classic customization, personalization of hospitality at its best. But you've got to keep telling stories, no different than I was sharing earlier about Aaron Sorkin, because every day is different. Every hour is different. So you keep going up and down. But the key here is, how do you stay on top of what the guest is experiencing, and how do you best convert that into loyalty?
It seems like you have to do a lot of communicating or ask the right kinds of questions, because you wouldn't have known this Peter Rabbit incident unless you were asking and talking to the customer. And how do you do that in a world of AI nowadays, where it seems like human contact is not the priority?
Well, I think AI is going to be very helpful, but it's also going to be the wrath of AI. Got to understand how to leverage it, you know.
Sure.
When you're looking at the mechanics, I would say, of, you know, say a process with the team, and I always break it into three simple things of steps, not tools and efforts. So what is a step? A step is an action that's needed to accomplish a goal in mind. So you've got to be able to do the studying of the customer. What's a tool? A tool is a methodology, actually, or a resource to utilize how work gets done. The operative word here is effort. And that's the byproduct of steps and tools. And if people put an effort to build what it is you're trying to build, you cannot replace humans with AI. Humans are dealing with humans. So a human would know how to create that Peter Rabbit moment. And so the reward is always going to be in the attempt. And somebody still has to put the input in for AI. Somebody still has to have the creativity and some of the other stuff that you can't take away when it comes to humans dealing with humans. And that's why I called it honing the human edge. How do you sharpen everybody?
Yeah. Well, you know, you certainly talk a great deal about people. One of the things that, I mean, you've sort of mentioned, but I wanted to get the word out there because I hear it a lot. I wonder how other people define it, and that's accountability. How do you keep people accountable for the playbook and everything else that you're talking about? So it sounds very Big Brother-ish, but how do you keep people accountable?
Well, I think the reality is that we have to have people understand that the business model that you have, there's methodology in measuring all of the business model. Accountability can come through performance reviews. You can do it based on quarterly. You could do it daily. It really gets down to what are you trying to accomplish? Now, my methodology, it's not a process that you go to the grocery store like picking out a box of cereal. It doesn't work that way. If I take a couple of moments and go like this. Number one, when you go through the selection process, as we talked about a moment ago, talent is invisible. It's about potential. Strength is about performance. How do you convert talent into strength? And how do you take the two of them? Then you have one strong person. And then strength breeds strength. And you keep going and keep going. And you have to have so many people on the team that all want to do the same thing. And so it's got to come from an internal mechanism. It's not like one of these things that you're building a model out of a toy store. Keith, if I were to give an example of that accountability question, if you went to the store and you bought a puzzle and say the puzzle had 100 pieces in it, and you take the puzzle out of the box, you throw it on the table and turn the puzzle upside down. Don't even show the picture of the puzzle. And then you say to the team, okay, fine, let's put this puzzle together, but we can't see the picture. So you got to put all the little pieces together. That's where the talent and that's where the strength and that's where all the other things come together, because you start looking at turnover. You minimize turnover by people saying, I want to be on this team. I want to win. And that accountability is not necessarily one of those things that people, I want to be on this team. I want to be a winner. And turnover, I'm not even sure what the numbers are anymore because of the way hospitality is going and there's less people wanting to get into it. But I think creating desire helps you create accountability one way or another. People want to be on the team.
You talked very briefly about your mentor. You said Horst Schultze. You want to say anything further? Well, I'm sure you have a lot of other folks that you've taken cues from. You even talked about a personal board of directors, which is also a chapter in my book. So we obviously think a lot alike, Ed. But the importance of having people like Horst on your team.
So, you know, Keith, I actually have your book here in my hand. It's page, chapter 26, page 102.
You know it better than I do.
Well, I know the reason why, because I remember when you and I sat at breakfast and I was talking to you about personal board of directors. Horst, you know what Horst said to me when I was working for Leona, and I worked for her for what, geez, a couple of thousand days and was like doing a term and I got green card through Leona. And so I first interviewed with Horst and he says to me, he says, how long have you been working for Leona Helmsley? I says, 5 years. And he says, well, what are you doing? And I says, well, I got my green card through her. And then his next thought was, anybody that can work for Leona Helmsley for 5 years has to work for me. So he made me a GM. He made me a GM at 36 of the Ritz-Carlton in New York. And when he did that, he also put faith and trust in me.
Yeah.
And then I met people from his circle. My personal board of directors probably consists of confidants, maybe five or six of them. Horst has always been on the board. My mom and dad were on the board. You know, you're going to have people close to you that you trust and love and care for. And then you have people that you outgrow. And we all know what that's like when you outgrow somebody and all of a sudden you're not communicating with them as much as you used to. And then, you know, they might say something and says, listen, I feel that I need to learn and grow in this other arena. And so Horst was as big as they got. Obviously, he's an icon in the industry, co-founder of Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah.
And he's done a tremendous amount. And he kept me on the team. I joined the brand when we had 7 hotels. I left when we had 77. So opened a bunch of properties and, you know, he taught me, you know, what else can I say? He gave me an opportunity to learn and it wasn't easy because, you know, that's why they call it work.
Yeah. I also think you quoted a few others. I don't know if they're on your personal board of directors at all times, but baseball names like Jeter and Torre and La Russa. What did those guys, besides larger than life personalities, what did they bring to the table in your discussions with them?
You know, it's funny. I had dinner with Joe last night. He's in town because he's going to a Dodger game, you know? It's so weird.
Right.
Joe used to say to me on a regular basis, he would say, you have to keep getting better to stay the same. And tell me about that, Joe. And then he would start talking baseball. He'd be talking about, you know, he won 4 World Series, Hall of Fame, you know, he's got all these credentials. And then he'd start telling me stories, some of the things that he would do just in the inning for the inning, you know, and just give me the cues and clues. And of course, he and Tony LaRusso are buddies and both in the Hall of Fame and got inducted, I think, in the same year. But what's a real pleasure, I guess, Keith, no different than yourself, you know, we all interact with different people at different times. And so it's really the personal moment when you're at a dinner table and there's just, say, 3 or 4 of you at the table. And it's more about the questions that you ask in the moment, for the moment, that I'm curious about. And then all of a sudden, he sheds a light. And so Joe like that. And of course, Horst was like that. I've got a few other people that are very valuable to myself when it came to Martin Lindstrom, another individual that would talk to me. And he's an accomplished author, Joseph Michelli, Kimberly Rath, John Timmerman. You know, there's a ton of people that you learn a little bit from all the time. No different than yourself.
And it's like these nuggets obviously become, I assume, part of your playbook and so forth. And maybe come full circle, because I don't want to take up too much of your time. What would you like to leave people with? They read this book. What is your hope that they come away with?
Well, I think if you go to page 100 on the book. You go to page 100 on the book. It talks to luxury. And you know, I've got the book in my hand. I've got all these yellow stickies. You know, I've worked for good owners. I worked for great owners. I worked for once-in-a-lifetime owners. And I like to describe, if you're going to be in hospitality, you want to have the willingness to, of course, share your strategy with as many people as you can. And then people always want to know, how do you build it? How do you do it? And so on. And what separates a good hotel from a great hotel and a once-in-a-lifetime hotel is always going to be the owner. Because if the owner, I really want to invest in this. And this is where you get to learn yourself. So you want to associate yourself with the people that will allow you to create the skill set to leave a good legacy. And the legacy that I feel is a teaching tool. That's what the Honing the Human Edge is. Hopefully it's enough of a tool that people pick it up. And not to give myself a commercial right now, but like, I'm going to give myself a 2-second commercial. I've had a few people work with me and they all bought, you know, 100 books here, 100 books there, a couple of hotels. And, you know, and that was at that travel weekly event I was sharing with you this past weekend and so on. The common thread is you never know what it's like to work on my team until you don't, because there's something missing that people say, I kind of enjoyed that. And they go to try to find it elsewhere or try to create it elsewhere. And so the legacy has to be, I suppose, there's a magic, there's magical value, there's meaningful value, there's surplus value, there's all kinds of different values that we all chase. And we all want to have that magical value. And if I can leave that with people that want to embrace what it's like in Honing the Human Edge, because it's humans dealing with humans, and it's not an easy task, because there's nothing more personal than helping one person grow in their career. So I guess that's part of the legacy. The magical thing, Keith, maybe I'll finish with that and go back to baseball. There's a thing known as an immaculate inning. The immaculate inning is 3 guys, 3 up, 3 down, 9 strikes.
Boom, boom, boom.
How many times? How many times has it happened in baseball? I don't think it's happened. Maybe 50 times in the life of baseball. Very difficult to do. Pitching a perfect game, very difficult to do. Yeah. But how do you get someone close to their potential is really the legacy piece that, and they don't know they have it. My dad gave it to me, you know, because he gives you the confidence. And it's an interesting component of how do you, you know, look at legacy. A legacy, you want to leave a little bit of a footprint in what people say about you.
Yeah, I've often argued with people about, I just was having this discussion with my 9-year-old son yesterday about perfection. Is it possible? And gosh darn it, the little guy was challenging me. He said, I think you can get close, but I don't know if you could ever get there. And I was like, I just believe that there's perfection all around us. Now, it might be very fleeting, but I think it's just that feeling that you were involved in something special. It might have been perfect for a moment. Working for Ed Mady in a set of circumstances was perfect. I don't know if you agree about my perfection discussion, but it just seems to me that at least that pursuit is a pretty great thing.
The pursuit, I think, is the buzz. I think that's where the dope is. So it's the pursuit, desire, and so on. And in our industry, if you look at friendship, fellowship, you look at relationships are all about shared experiences. You really want to determine, well, how do you get there? Well, you got to be likable to be lovable. And that's not done by, you know, freezing people up. That's done by the sheer thing about hospitality. You know, even if you look at quoting Cesar Ritz, and he said, there's nothing more personal than taking care of someone's sleep. And when you take care of people the same way, when you really embrace them and show them the way, there is a formula for everybody. You can have those immaculate innings every now and then. And everybody with having one of those immaculate innings, I don't think good enough to do that.
You still have to come out for the next inning usually.
Yeah.
I hear you. And maybe that's a great place to stop. I just want to really encourage, I've encouraged everyone on my team to go out and get the book.
Thank you.
Anyone involved in hospitality, I think it'll warm the heart. And for people not in the hospitality industry, I think it'll be a nice clue. It'll be a nice step to add more heart into the leadership formula. So I appreciate what you've done, Ed, and what you're going to continue to do, because I know you're not done.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. The Amazon reviews speak for themselves. Yeah.
Thank you for joining Dollars and Drivers. Until next time, it's Keith Kafchin signing off.